Welcome to the Brew Crew Review Podcast, the show by fans for fans of your Milwaukee Brewers.
All right, welcome to the Brew Crew Review Podcast. Joining you today is myself, Craig, and my co-host, Vince. Vince, how's it all going? As we're a couple days out from MLB's Around the League opening day.
Yeah, Craig, I'm great. Yeah, always great when baseball season starts. It's a special time of year. And, you know, I think that there's very few times a year where we're not mad at something that's going on, either on or off the field. So I'm going to take advantage of those feelings here this week.
Yeah. So unfortunately, just after our last podcast, there was some pretty heartbreaking news coming in the Brewers Nation. And that was that our all-star closer, Devin Williams, had a couple of fractures in his back, and he was going to be out for at least the first 3 months of the season. What was your thoughts when you heard that news, Vince?
Yeah, it's obviously really bad news. I mean, Devin Williams is not just our closer. He's an elite reliever. He's a very special pitcher. He's a guy that the Brewers were obviously depending on quite a bit. And ever since the Josh Hader trade, he's, you know, pretty seamlessly stepped into that role. And every ranking that I've seen has Devin Williams in the top three relievers in all of baseball. So it's a pretty devastating loss, whichever way you look at it. That being said, I think that you can look at it, you know, one of two ways. I mean, first, yes, it's devastating. But second, I think that it's also, it is a loss from an area of strength for the Brewers. I do think that we have a pretty solid back end of the bullpen. I think that even after the injury was reported, the Brewers bullpen still ranks eighth in baseball, which, you know, isn't great, but it isn't awful by any stretch of the imagination. So I look at the bullpen as still being a very strong unit overall. I'm interested to see if Abner Uribe can step right into that role. I do think that he's got elite stuff. I think that fastball plays incredibly well for a potential closer. And it's all just a matter of maturity. I think that, you know, we saw what he could do in the big leagues at times last year after he got called up around the All-Star break. He's still obviously very young. So I'm not quite sure if he's ready for that role yet or not. I know that you and I were having that discussion in one of our pre-production meetings, Craig, but I personally would be okay, just given the nature of this team and how young we're going at a multitude of positions, I would be okay with the Brewers giving Abner Uribe a chance to look at that closer's role off the bat, with the understanding that he's a fill-in until Devin Williams comes back, but also with an eye to the future, because Devin Williams had been the subject of a few, you know, trade speculations going into the season. So who knows how long Devin's even going to be in Milwaukee, but I think that for this year, it'd be interesting to see what Uribe can do as sort of a setting for future seasons to come if we choose not to re-sign Devin Williams.
Yeah, that's an interesting point and probably a pretty good guess. I think with Williams not being in the bullpen the first 3 months of the season, it's pretty clear, and I think no doubt that Abner Uribe is probably our closer of the future beyond Devin Williams, given the stuff they've shown so far. With that being said, I think he still is a little bit erratic for a closer as far as, like, you know, the control and the command go. So with that, and also, but the number one reason I feel the Brewers won't go with him as a closer exclusively, especially, I mean, he might get a couple of times, but really for arbitration purposes, they don't want to start upping his arbitration salary this early into arbitration, I think, because I think they foresee he's going to be, you know, a cheaper closer for a number of years. And if they get him occurring saves anymore, you know, he's obviously going to argue for more money in arbitration going forward. So I think, unfortunately, that's really, you might be like, well, that's really being cheap. Well, welcome to be a Milwaukee Brewer fan, unfortunately. but I mean, I think that might be one deterrent, but he probably will get some save chances, but I think it'll be a committee, unfortunately, or fortunately, maybe that's just the best way to handle it. But I think Yoel Piamps last year was a great setup man the first half. Second half, he kind of faded away, but he does have that experience in the back end of the bullpen. I think his trusted arm back there. My guess is he'd get the bulk of the opportunities. And I also think you should watch out if you're a Brewer fan for Trevor McGill, because I think his fastball supposedly has upticked a couple of miles an hour. It used to sit about 95, wow, and now he's throwing 98 miles an hour. So I think that they feel that he really has. I think his strikeout rate was something ridiculous last year, like 35% strikeout rate or something. So I think they really feel that he has the stuff to close. And so I think he'll get some opportunities as well. But I think it'll be a committee moving forward, and maybe that is the best way to handle it. I'm not sure, you know, without knowing a new manager and Pat Murphy, what his style is. There's some managers that are really old school and just love that one closer. But other guys are mix and match, or depending on, you know, I think it'll just be more of a committee approach, and that might not be best for the team overall, but maybe it will be. So you know, you always want that one guy that you can turn to, but we'll see how they handle it. I think one guy, if someone pitches well to begin with, their first opportunity, they might just emerge as someone that will be, you know, not officially labeled a closer, but will basically be holding down the fort until Devin Williams gets healthy. So that's my
opinion. We talked about it a little bit, but I think the Pat Murphy is kind of that weird mix of both old school and new school as well, if that makes sense. I mean, he has some attributes kind of both camps, which I think is really good. And I think that you do need to be somewhat of a hybrid and, you know, in today's day and age. So I am interested to see what kind of transpires. The reason I said what I said about Uribe is just because his stuff just screams closer to me, but yeah, who knows? I mean, if the Brewers are interested in just, you know, saving money, I guess that you might be right. And maybe he isn't thrown into the mix quite as often, but yeah, it'll be really interesting to see. I do think though that overall the Brewers bullpen is still solid enough that if they choose to, whichever way they choose to go, actually, I think that they're going to be okay. And it'll be great when Devin, you know, comes back and his arm is added to that mix as well. It only makes the team that much stronger.
Yep. That's great points. Next thing on the agenda is another unfortunate kind of distant news that we don't like to hear, but Brandon Woodruff himself has, and obviously everyone's pretty happy they came back and signed a 2-year contract with a mutual option for a third year this year, but he did come out and say that he's declaring himself out for this year. I don't know, was that, you know, like, obviously he got advice from someone or whatever that it's best for him to probably just be shut down this whole year and not push it or whatever. So unfortunately, you know, that just, you know, means he's not going to be part of this rotation this year. Hopefully, though, I think you're going to see him healthy back 100%, hopefully, next year. And if he's able to do that, he can really, you know, probably get himself a nice payday. But he really seems, I hope that he really, you know, the Brewers, you know, offering him this olive branch and getting him under contract even for this year, I think it was a huge, meant a lot to Woodruff, the speculation, but I think that's going to help them if they do want to lock him. If he shows himself healthy next year, I think he's going to listen to what the Milwaukee Brewers have to offer him for a long-term contract. And if it's a fair value, he'll probably take it before hitting the open market, because I think that was a huge thing. I know that he likes Milwaukee and would love to be a Milwaukee Brewer long-term. So that's kind of cool. And I'm glad he's still in the organization for that reason, but unfortunately we won't be seeing him in 2024.
Yeah, and clearly it was a pretty good faith effort on the part of the organization to bring him back for, you know, and to pay him for a year in which it was never likely that he was going to pitch. The fact that he's saying that he's out for the entire year is a bit of a surprise to me. One of the things that had kind of drawn me into the idea of signing him to a 2-year deal was the fact that maybe he could come back around the deadline and be sort of like a new acquisition at that point for, you know, the rotation down the stretch and into the postseason. But apparently that's not to be. And I don't know if maybe his words are being taken a little out of context in the sense that maybe he's just not preparing for that. But if things, you know, are on a good track, it's still a possibility or not, because no team statement was ever officially issued on this. But it certainly doesn't sound good from the news that we heard from some of our colleagues, including Curtis Hogg and others this week.
Yeah, our colleague Tom Carter as well.
I know that we had the news from our anonymous source. We put that dead at Tom Carter, but we did put it out there on social media because of what Tom said. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So, it's interesting language in the contract. So we do have him under contract all of next year with a mutual option for a third year. And that third year probably won't be agreed by both sides. So most likely something would have to get worked out longer term beyond next year. But it'll be nice to know that we'll have him from the start next year, and hoping that he can show that he'll be a healthy member of next year's rotation. Okay, a couple other more exciting things. The opening day rosters aren't officially submitted yet, but some of the things are really coming to light as far as who's going to make the team and who's not. I've got a list here in front of me who is pretty much solid that these guys are going to be making the 26-man roster for opening day. I'll throw out each position, and then you can tell me if you disagree at the end with any of the ones that are making team. Some of these are actually for sure. We already know that Devin Williams and Wade Miley will be starting the year on the IL, obviously, and Brandon Woodruff. But Yep. So we've got for catcher, I've got making the team William Contreras and Gary Sanchez. For the infield, we've got Rhys Hoskins, Bryce Terang, Willie Adames, Joey Ortiz. Congratulations to him for making his first opening day roster. That was announced before our taping today. Andrew Monasterio and Jake Bowers. So I believe those will be our six infielders. Our outfielders will make the team. Christian Yelich, Jackson Chirio, that, of course, came out last week, too. That's huge news that Chirio will be opening team with opening day with the team. Sal Frelick, Garrett Mitchell, if healthy, and Blake Perkins. And our starting rotation going into the season, it's already lined up that it'll be Freddie Peralta opening day. Our second game of the season will be pitched by new acquisition D.L. Hall, followed by Jake Junis. And then fourth and fifth starter, I'm not sure what order, but Colin Ray and Joe Ross until Wade Miley comes back from the IL. We also did send Robert Gasser and Aaron Ashby to back down to AAA. So there's a couple of intriguing lefty arms that can help at any point, too. Our bullpen, we've got Brian Wilson as our swingman. Brian Hudson, a left-hander acquired from the Dodgers, will likely make the team. Elvis Peguero, Thiago Vieira most likely will make the team as a right-hander. And, of course, Tortavaca.
That was actually just announced, Craig. That's kind of breaking. He is making the team, it looks like.
Okay, great. Because I know he was out of options. And then we've got, of course, Hobie Milner, our back of the bullpen lefty reliever. And then, as we already mentioned, Trevor McGill, Yoel Piamps, and Abner Uribe will also be part of the bullpen. So that is all 26 that I've got. Now, there was some news that Garrett Mitchell, like, jammed his hand or something on a swing yesterday and had to go for some imaging. And, man, this guy just can't catch a break, but hopefully everything's okay. If he weren't to make the team, there's a possible that we'd carry a third catcher or who knows, maybe call up another outfielder. But hopefully he's healthy enough to make it into the season. And I'm pretty certain that and the other person that also was kind of on the fringe that they haven't sent down officially yet, but that would be Oliver Dunn, who's had a pretty nice spring, and it was an acquisition from the Phillies over the summer. He is already, I think, 27 or 28 years old. So he can play every infield position, I believe. So he'd be somewhat valuable, but I think he's a little bit redundant with Monasterio making the team, I'm pretty sure, from what he showed last year. But again, if Mitchell's out, possibly Dunn will make the roster as well. Do you have any thoughts on the roster I threw out there or any changes?
No, I mean, I think that was all officially announced here today, Craig. So those, I agree. The team put that out there. We're here within the last hour. So I think that the only question is going to be about Eric Haas, maybe or maybe not taking the place of Garrett Mitchell because of the hand injury. I know that Mitchell goes for some x-rays today in Maryvale just to see what, if any, damage is shown on that front. But Eric Haas has had a great spring. I'm sure he can step in as needed, but it'll be, I guess, Owen Miller not making the team is a bit surprising. What do you think about that?
What, I'm sorry, what was that?
I guess Owen Miller not making the team.
I didn't mean to leave him off, but again, we collected quite a few versatile middle infielders, especially for the left side of the infield, and Owen Miller fit that. But again, I think with Dunn and Monasterio, and I think Miller would have had a chance if Ortiz would have started at AAA, which I actually thought was going to be a possibility, but he had a pretty solid spring. And I don't know what the one thing that is kind of not backtracking, but it does. I thought at some point it was going to be Sal Frelick was going to be literally our almost everyday starter at third base. It now looks like it's going to, Joey Ortiz is going to have to get the majority of the bats there or somewhat platooning at second with Bryce Terang, but basically both Terang and Ortiz need to get like five or six starts a week, in my opinion, between second and third. Yeah. So that kind of leaves Frelick only kind of fill in at third against some tough righties or whatever. I mean, for the most part, I'm guessing. So what that means is there'll be some shuffling around the outfield to get Frelick in there, I would say at least 6 days a week, if not all seven. Also interesting lineup change is that Murphy came out today and said that Yelich, who spent all last season as our leadoff hitter pretty successfully, is now going to be our number three hitter, and it'll be Mitchell or Frelick hitting leadoff. What's your thoughts on that move?
I like Yelich as a leadoff hitter last year. I think that he showed signs of life in ways that he hadn't in the previous couple seasons because of his switch to being a leadoff hitter. Kind of a different look. I thought that, you know, he provided some spark at the top. But, you know, that being said, I think that you can get that same level of production from either Frelick or Mitchell. My concern is what happened to Yelly in the three hole. You know, is that Yelly's best spot? So that's my only concern. I'm not really as concerned about Frelick or Mitchell's role as I am about the impact on Yelly. On the overall roster construction, though, Craig, I you know, just to kind of get back to this a little bit, there are a couple other surprises to me besides just Owen Miller. I'm really kind of surprised that this is the way that our starting rotation is shaping up. I know he was injured for, you know, all of last year, but I really thought that Aaron Ashby was going to get a crack at the rotation this year. I thought that Robert Gasser was going to be in the rotation this year. For us to go with both Eunice and Ross and Ray as our 3, 4, or 5 starters, and then a rookie as our number 2 starter, that's a lot of question marks in our starting rotation. So not to take anything away from those guys, but it's just kind of interesting. I almost would have rather have gone with a guy like Gasser just to see what he has. I think his upside is higher than somebody like Jacob Eunice or a Joe Ross. I hope to be eating crow about this, and maybe the Brewers staff see some things in these guys that, you know, turn them into the next version of Wade Miley. And when the actual Wade Miley does come back, we'll see some changes in the rotation, of course, as well at that point. But until that happens, I would say that the starting rotation is a little bit of a surprise for me. And the other guy who I am shocked at, just kind of the lack of conversation about the fact that he's not starting in the big leagues, is Tyler Black. I mean, I just don't know what else this guy needs to do at the AAA level. He's slugged a ton. He plays multiple positions. The guy can play third or first or second base. I mean, I just don't know what else the guy needs to do. He's proven that he can be an everyday player. He's proven that he can hit. I just don't know what else Tyler Black needs to do to get on a big league team or get a chance.
Yeah, I think unfortunately for Tyler Black, who I think came in the offseason, everyone thinking that he was going to be our third baseman or if not nothing else, DH, some at bats or whatnot. I think a couple of things happened that work not in his favor, I guess. First of all, the Jake Bowers acquisition didn't necessarily help him out. And then, of course, Gary Sanchez signing kind of sucked up some DH at bats probably that could have been available. And then I think I don't want to say nail in the coffin, but the ultimate thing that I think sent him back to AAA or whatever was probably the fact that when we did trade Corbin Burns, we acquired Joey Ortiz, who can play third base as well. And probably, I shouldn't say probably, most likely for sure, better defensively than Black. So I think the Brewers value that. And again, given that he's even a year older, I think, than Black, they feel he was more major league ready, most likely. But that being said, I mean, there's nothing wrong with having that depth. And I think he will get his opportunity at some point.
For sure. Maybe for sure. Go ahead, Craig. Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I think that we've talked about it on our show before, but I do think that, you know, given that Hoskins is only locked down for one more season, or just this season, I should say, I do think that Tyler Black could be our everyday first baseman going forward in 2025. So I'm sure we're going to see him in the big leagues this year, barring some injury or some, you know, barring a trade that he'd be included in. But I would be shocked if he's not, you know, a kind of a vital piece of our offense going forward. So we're going to have to get him some major league at bats this season if he is going to step in and play first for us next year, if that's a possibility.
Yeah, and I think another surprise for Brewer fans, at least, I think most people thought Joey Weimer would probably be part of at least the opening day roster, but instead they're going with, like, Blake Perkins. And again, I think that the organization is making that decision because they want him to get regular at bats. And that might be the same reason for Tyler Black. Would they rather have Tyler Black start 3 days a week at the major league level or get 7 days a week at bats down at AAA? Given that we're just launching off the season, I think that they felt that's better. That way they have the veterans like Bauer, if you want to call him that. Bauer's like, we want to call him that, but at the major league level, because that way, if they show that they can rake at AAA, then they can, you know, cut Bauer or trade him or whatever and then bring him up. Whereas they can't do the opposite. They can't start with Black at the major league level and then send Bowers down because that's not unless he has options remaining. And so that's just an example. Same thing. So I mean, I think that's probably the reasoning behind it. But it is kind of a little bit surprising. And actually, I thought that might have been one of the reasons, like, Joey Ortiz might have been sent back to AAA to get him regular at bats too. But I think that they're planning on getting him at least 5 or 6 starts a week somehow at second or third at the major league level, so that his bat will be in the lineup pretty often. So that's my thoughts, at least, on that.
Yeah, I think that you're right. And, you know, we get all excited about opening day, and everybody does. And it is. It's a huge day, and there is something, you know, I think special and meaningful about making an opening day roster, and it's a big deal, and it gets talked about, like Ortiz is making his first opening day roster this year. That's a huge deal for guys and for fans as well. But that being said, Joey Weimer did not make the opening day roster in 2023. He got called up, I think, in game two after the injury to Luis Urias, but he ended up playing in 132 games. So it's not like we're likely to never see these guys this year. You know, my guess is that there's a pretty and certainly this has been kind of a trademark for the Brewers in the past, you know, I would say 7, 8, 9 years. And I think it'll continue this year, but there's like a super shuttle going between Nashville or wherever the Brewers AAA team happens to be that season in Milwaukee. And I think that that's going to continue. So I think that we're going to see a lot of guys kind of rotating in and out. And as big of a deal as opening day is on the calendar every year, it's not the only day on the calendar, and it's a long season. And we're going to, I'm sure, see Tyler Black this year. I'm sure that we're going to see Aaron Ashby. I'm sure that we're going to see all these guys at different points. And I'm sure that they're all going to play a role in the success of this team. I mean, when you look at a team's roster construction on, you know, the final game of the season compared to opening day, there are definitely significant changes that take place over the course of the year. So Joey Weimer and these guys who are, you know, currently in the minor leagues could definitely be very vital pieces of that overall puzzle for the Brewers in 2024.
Yeah, I think that they've just built their depth, and they know that some of these guys are major league ready. Ashby's coming back from injury, and Gasser is showing he's major league ready, but I don't think they see any harm in letting him start off at AAA and bring him up after they get a little bit, you know, get stretched out a little bit more or whatever, or you know, be there on the ready in case of injury. But if I were to put money down on as a Brewer fan, I can guarantee you that both Aaron Ashby and Robert Gasser will have more MLB starts at the major league level than Yunus or Ross, for that matter. And even for Ray. So, I mean, obviously, no offense to those guys, but Ross, Yunus, and Ray kind of seem to be like the veteran interchangeable guys. They're kind of like the Jason Alexanders of this year, where they're kind of just placeholders for depth. When in reality,
hey, this is our third year with Colin Ray, man. I don't know. He was a Brewer starting in 2021, and then he came back for 23 and now for 24. So he's kind of an integral part of our team at this point. But I totally agree. And we are going to see.
I just don't feel like he has an offside in some of the younger guys. I mean, it's no offense to him. Well, I mean, sure. But yeah.
Yeah. That is his upside. You know, his upside is veteran depth. And that's what he does, and that's what he does, you know, well enough to continue to be a part of the Brewers' plans every year. And that's okay. That's exactly what you do need, a guy like that, quite frankly. I don't know if you need three, but you definitely need at least one, maybe two. And you could never have enough pitching depth, as we've seen with, you know, our injuries already this spring to Wade Miley and Devin Williams. You can never have enough pitching. You just don't know. Our interns are just handing me a note here, Scotty's interns, I should say. Weimer's spring training numbers were not good. That should also be pointed out in part of this conversation. He hit 196. Understandably, this is a very small sample size, but in 17 games, 56 plate appearances, he hit 196. He had 15 strikeouts in 51 at bats. So no home runs, two RBIs. So it was not a good spring. It's not like he was putting up a ton of great numbers or something that the Brewers made a decision that they were still going to send him down. So I don't necessarily think that this was all worked out in advance. I don't think that there was necessarily a plan that it was going to be Perkins instead of Weimer. I think that both Perkins and Weimer both provide great defense, but honestly, Perkins doesn't get talked about nearly as much because Joey Weimer comes with more of a prospect pedigree. But I will say that Weimer's numbers in spring really don't justify a call up at this point.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Okay, well, let's to wrap up this podcast, let's go over what I'll let you start off with this, Vince. What are your couple of, I put down three keys, but what are your keys, however many there, keys to the Milwaukee Brewers season? And let me start by saying, unfortunately, on our predictions podcast last time, I think I picked the Brewers to finish second and you picked first. I mean, obviously, yeah, we're super optimistic and feel like the Brewers are still going to contend for a playoff spot. I will say that after looking at all across the industry wide, that most people do not share our same optimism and are picking
to
finish even third or fourth in the division. So I think that maybe the truth lies somewhere in between, but this might be a growing pains year, but we'll see. What are your keys for the Brewers to make the playoffs and have a successful 2024?
Well, let me just say this. The New York Times in their baseball preview edition yesterday picked the Brewers to finish third behind Cincinnati and Chicago. But our friend and very supportive listener, Vikram, has predicted the Brewers to finish first to win the World Series and to finish 162 on the year. So I tend to side more with Vikram on this one. I think that the Brewers are still a very solid team. I still think that it's our division to lose until proven otherwise. And I still think that there's a lack of improvement from the other teams in the NL Central. And I will also just say that when you look at the predictions from national media over the course of the last 7-8 forever years, I don't think the Brewers ever get their due, quite frankly. And I'm not saying that we're going to be gangbusters this year, but I am saying that I don't think that we're ever going to look to the national media for where the Brewers' talent level actually lies, because I don't think the national media really pays much attention to us until, you know, it's way later in the season. So anyways, to answer your question, where the three keys lie, I think that the keys lie in one of the same keys from last year. How are the young guys step up? And I'm talking position players. I'm talking Sal Frelick, Bryce Terang, can he hit better this year? I'm talking about Joey Weimer when he comes back up. I'm talking about Ortiz. I'm talking about, you know, all these first and second year players, our freshmen and sophomore guys. Really, we need to kind of get past a few growing pains, I'm sure, with all of them still, but I do want to start seeing where that talent level actually lies. So that's key number one. Key number two for me is going to be to avoid any more injuries to our starting rotation. I just don't think that we can handle much more. Our starting rotation is definitely the weak spot of this team. So that'll be a key component is, you know, what is our rotation going to look like at the end of the year compared to today? So we'll just say the rotation generally, but kind of a sub focus on injuries in the rotation. And then our last bit for me, at least, is going to be power. I think, yeah, we'll say power. I think that the addition of Rhys Hoskins is obviously a huge boon for the lineup, but I still worry about this team's lack of pop. I'm hopeful that Jackson Churio is able to help with that. I don't know that he will be, especially as a rookie. If he hits 20-plus home runs, I'll be elated at this point. And I know that some are predicting him for, you know, around that. So I'd be elated with that type of production, but I'm a little worried about our lack of pop in this lineup still.
Those are all great points. I would say that because of
I'm sorry, Craig, just to finish up, I will say that I think our bullpen is solid and I think our bench is solid. So, okay, now I'm done.
Yeah, I think our depth and our versatility is definitely a strength of the team. But, I will say that if he's healthy, Gary Sanchez might get surprisingly more at bats than Brewer fans might think, and not necessarily at the catching position. I think he's going to get most of his bats at DH. And just for his power, I mean, if he gets 400 at-bats at DH, he could probably hit 25 to 30 home runs, which is something the Brewers sorely need out of this lineup. I do like how the roster is constructed, but overall, it's a mixture of, decent depth and versatility, but really, really leans heavily on young guys all the way around the team, which I think really does show me that this could be like a growing pain years. Lots of people make strides and whatnot, but we may not be quite as successful with the win-loss record as we're thinking with our optimism coming in the season, but we'll see. So my keys to the season are, I'll start off by saying my first key is four left-handed starters. That's Miley. He needs to get healthy. That's D.L. Hall. He needs to show that he's going to be a great future starter and starting this year. Then you've got, two lefties you mentioned, Aaron Ashby. He needs a return from injury and show the promise that he showed 2 years ago to this club, because I think he could be easily a number three or higher starter. And then you've got Robert Gasser, who I think is surprisingly overlooked as far as like what he really can bring to the table. A lot of guys probably peg him as like a number five starter. I think he's good as a number three or four starter in the future. I think he's going to surprise a lot of people, and he's going to get a lot of starts this year, even though he started the year in the minor leagues. So that's one of my first keys for left-hand pitchers.
Great.
And then my second key is, well, the young bats. Obviously, Jackson Trio, he needs to be, you know, he's not going to be a superstar necessarily right out of the gate, but I think he needs to be a star-level player. Then you've got Sal Frelick. Now that he can play third and outfield, I think he's going to be a lineup almost every day. And he's my hand-picked favorite for the leadoff spot now that Yelich is being moved. Obviously, he might share that spot with Mitchell, but I really think Frelick is perfect for the leadoff spot, and I think he'll emerge as that. And then Garrett Mitchell, this guy needs to stay healthy. He needs to stay in the lineup. And I think he's almost overlooked too, as far as like what potential he can bring. I think he's an easy 2020 player with good on base skills, which is a borderline all star, as long as he can stay healthy and show that he's got that, you know, fulfill his promise, so to speak. And then not to mention the two infielders, the young infielders, and that's Joey Ortiz and Bryce Terang, will get a lot of at-bats. I think they'll both get 400 or 500 more at-bats this year, and I think that they need to show that they're worthy of being a starting MLB player on the infield, because I really do believe that they're going to be shortstop, second baseman next year and going forward under team control for at least the next 5 or 6 years for those guys. So they'll be exciting middle of the infield partners. I think that they need to show that their bats are worthy of it, I guess. I think it's pretty clear that their gloves are, for sure, and we'll see that this year. And that's one of this team's strength is their defense, for sure. And then my last key to the season is obviously going to be the return of Devin Williams. I mean, with him in the bullpen, we have a pretty solid back of the bullpen, obviously, with an all-star closer. But when you take him out of the equation, we're going to see, you know, that, you know, it seems like a little bit of a patchwork bullpen up and down right now, if you look at it going into opening day. But, you know, Piamps is, you know, pretty well established, and Uribe's got some potential, and, you know, McGill supposedly should be there. And Milner had a surprisingly awesome season last year. Look at his overall stats. I think he had like almost 80 appearances, had a 1.82 ERA. The guy's pretty undervalued, underappreciated lefty in the bullpen. So he's a valuable piece, and at least he's there. But as far as the other guys, like from the no offense to Bryce Wilson, but from the other four guys that are currently on the bullpen, I mean, I just don't know what to expect from any of these guys. I mean, they could be easily replaced. They could be the next Yoel Piamps, or you just never know. But we'll see. But the bullpen to me is not a strength as we enter the 2024 season. But hopefully, it can turn into one with the return of Devin Williams. So,
yeah, I do think it's a little stronger than. I think kind of what you just said, but I get your point. And certainly when Devin comes back, it's going to be a lot better because you're talking about one of the top, in my opinion, two relievers in all of baseball, but in consensus top three. So absolutely, point taken. I'm going to put you on the spot, Craig. As a history guy, though, I, you know, try to look to examples from the past and make comparisons. So what Brewers season do you think that this one could most compare to? Is my question, and since I'm putting you on the spot, I guess I'll just say mine first, just so you have a little bit more time to think. But I'm going to say 2007. I was reading or listening to an interview with our old friend Corey Hart today, just talking about that younger group of guys that kind of came up. And I think that we're past the 2005 stage with some of these guys, since we had a year with them last year. But I think the 2007 is when they got good in some ways. So I'm going to go 2007. What about you?
All right, well, I'll throw one out for our older listeners. I'll say 1979 Brewers.
Ooh, interesting. Nice. What makes you say
because,
that?
I mean, Jan Mulder had gotten their teeth cut, so to speak. and yeah. Actually, maybe more realistic, this is probably more of like the 1978 Brewers, which was that Jan's, or I'm sorry, Mulder's rookie season?
That was Mulder's rookie season, and the Brewers had just dipped into free agency for the first time, really. At that point, they brought in George Bamberger as the manager for the 78 season, and they had signed Larry Heisel and Sal Bando that offseason. So there were two pretty big acquisitions that the Brewers had for the first time, kind of going into free agency and not just picking up guys via trade.
Okay, I'll stick with 1979 then, because I feel like Sal Frelick could be the new Topal Mulder, and he's in his second season officially. So, and hopefully Jack Centurio is our next lifetime Brewer Hall of Famer like Rob Young, but we'll see.
There you go. I like it. Maybe we should call our old friend Larry Sorensen and bring him back on the show, because he was a key component of that 1979 team. So we may get some insight into the 2024 Brewers from an old pitcher.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, all right. Well, so I mean, that's exciting. If you think of it that way, this might not be the most successful Brewer season that we were hoping for, but it could be a springboard to a great future for the preceding seasons after this. So, I'm not pursuing the following seasons after this. So, I mean, yeah, it's exciting. But if I had to put that money, I wouldn't necessarily bet that the Milwaukee Brewers are shoo-ins to make even a wild card spot this year. I think there'll be a lot of growing pains. And obviously you're starting with someone like, you know, starting center fielder as a rookie, 20-year-old rookie, you know, that could have a lot of variations on how successful that is. So with that being said, I think we have a real good one. And obviously the top three consensus prospect in all of baseball, Jackson Trio. I think he alone is the most exciting part of the season. If you're a Brewer fan, I don't know how you wouldn't want to come onto the ballpark and see that guy play, as well as a lot of these other younger guys, including our acquisitions in the Burns trade, who both, not yeah. coincidentally, made the opening day roster, and D.L. Hall, who's will be their number two starters to start off, obviously, until Miley's healthy. And then Joey Ortiz, who, like we already mentioned, should get some regular at-bats. So good to see our future
yeah.
coming into play right away.
Hey, absolutely. I am never going to turn down the opportunity to watch Brewers baseball. It's literally my favorite thing to do. So I'm super pumped about the season as always. I guess one last question for you before we sign off here, Craig. Given what you just said, and that you're kind of lowering expectations a little bit for the team's overall record this year, is that going to kind of mitigate some of your frustration? Do you think your overall emotional health will be better and your frustration level will be down a little bit this year? Maybe have a more measured response when the Brewers do mess up on the field, if they do?
I mean, I can't promise that I'll swear less, but I'll try to not
yeah.
throw things across the room out of frustration as much, because I mean, I'll say that for the next couple seasons.
Yeah,
I think for this year, just yeah, I should be able to handle. I think I know there'll be some frustration coming, and unfortunately, I did lower my expectations for our win total once I found out the Devin Williams news. I think that cost us at least 4 or 5 wins on the season, unfortunately.
Yeah,
but we'll see.
Well, it sounds like Scott Bartel is also on the disabled list all season, so maybe that'll also help your frustration levels a little bit. You seem to throw more stuff when he's around, so that'll probably also help your blood
That's
pressure.
True. That's yeah. true. Got to work on my mental health issues as a Brewer fan. So, all right. Thanks.
Don't we all? So, hey, give us a quick follow, Brewer Review One on Twitter. We certainly appreciate your support and your interaction on there. That's typically where our team and our interns are most active. You can send any questions. We'll try to get to them on our next show, and we can have a little bit more time. Brewer Review Podcast with an S at gmail.com.
All right. Stay classy, and all Central teams that are going to finish behind us, and go Brewers.
Hey, stay classy, Craig. Go Brewers. And hey, Milwaukee, I'll see y'all for opening day. Can't wait to be up there.
Awesome. We'll meet up in the parking lot. See you
Sounds
later,
Sounds good,
Brewers
man.
Fans.
Go Brewers. 2024, baby. All right, go Brewers.
Go Brewers.